Dan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And we have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, we have with us on the line one of my favorite guests, and that's William Federer. And we carry a number of his books, America's God and Country, and the story of Santa Claus, and the story of George Washington Carver, and there's so many of the books that he's written we carry because we think that they're vitally important to understand the America we live in today. Now, 50 years ago, everybody in the United States knew America was a Christian country. Even if they weren't Christian, they knew this was a Christian country. They knew that the Declaration of Independence was part of the very basic law of this country. And they knew that our freedom came from God, as it said in the Declaration, to guarantee these truths, rights which are laid out, these God-given rights, why governments are formed among men, deriving their power from the consent of the governed. The whole idea of the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness came from God. That was set forth so clearly in the Declaration of Independence. But those people who had established a dictatorship in America, and there really are people, and there really are secret societies, and there really are organizations working behind the scenes that would destroy the Christian heritage of this country, and because they control the media, because they control our educational system, and because they're working in government, today, if any one of our politicians would dare to get up and say we were a Christian nation, he would be attacked by both the right and left sides of the controlled medium. He would be attacked by everybody in Congress, and pretty soon he'd have to back down. And yet it should be so self-evident to everybody that America was a Christian nation, and it still is, and the majority of people feel very strongly about their religious faith and the source of our freedom. But nobody wants to talk about it. Well, Bill Federer has. He's written a book about it. Bill, why don't you pick up the story?
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stan. It's always great to be with you. And the title of my new book is Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion. And, you know, we have all these court cases where they're taking God out of the Pledge of Allegiance, where they're wanting to take the Ten Commandments down, where they're kicking the Boy Scouts off of Balboa Park in California, where they've been for 50 years, simply because the Boy Scouts have in their pledge, do my duty to God and my country. We've got, you know, the defunding of the Salvation Army, all these different things. In my book, I have an entire chapter just dedicated to these lawsuits, just to explain them, where, you know, in the New Orleans, the ACLU sued to stop student-led prayer. In Virginia, the ACLU sued to stop a student-led moment of silence because somebody might accidentally pray. In Santa Fe, New Mexico, the ACLU sued to stop prayer before a football game, and then they sued to stop a student-led message before the football game. And the problem is that organizations and schools are so afraid of these ACLU lawsuits that they're taking several steps back from what they legally can do simply to avoid this terrorism, this legal terrorism, this threat of bankruptcy. And so they end up, it's sort of like squatters' rights, you know, they move further away and establish, well, you can't even mention God, even though legally you can. The school tells the kids they can't because they don't want to risk a lawsuit by the ACLU.
Hold that thought right there, Bill. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. One of our favorite guests is with us this afternoon. His name is William Federer, and he's written a number of books which we carry, including America's God and Country, and he's written books on Santa Claus and of course, George Washington Carver. And well, we've got a whole list of them. Why don't we just list some of those books you have written that we carry, Bill?
Sure. Of course, America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations has sold 500,000 copies. It's a big, thick, like a Bartlett's Book of Quotes, only famous Americans, what they said about God, alphabetically arranged, real user-friendly. Another is Treasury of Presidential Quotations, quotes from all 43 presidents in chronological order, what they said about faith, morality, deity, from their public papers, all footnoted. And then another is three secular reasons why America should be under God. The idea that you know, the Declaration of Independence says all men are endowed by their creator with certain innate rights. Well, if there is no creator, then you're not endowed with any rights.
Well, of course, that's really what the people in the anti-Christian lawyers union, they refer to as the ACLU, that's what they really want. This is the fascist element in our society, wrapping themselves in the flag and intent upon destroying the very religious foundation that made America unique among nations.
And another recent book I did is The Interesting History of Income Tax. You know, 1951 was the very first time a deduction was allowed for giving to a 501c3 organization, a church. So prior to 1951, churches did not have to worry about losing their tax-exempt status because there was none. And churches spoke out about every social issue from abolition of slavery to women's suffrage to prohibition.
I'm going to have to get a copy of that one, and we'll have to do some programs on that as well. I think that's so important, the way that the government has so cleverly, got the churches under their control by lining their pockets with gold.
And actually, prior to 1913, there was no 16th Amendment. There was no income tax. You know, 1951 is when they gave the ability to write the deduction down, but there were no limits on the churches. So they were still able to speak out politically until Lyndon Johnson from Texas ran for Senate. And because of his views, a lot of churches spoke out against him. When he got elected, he pushed a bill through Congress to remove the 501c3 status from those churches that spoke out too politically. It was a way of punishing his enemies, but that is what now is the threat, that hung over the heads of every church, is that, well, you'll lose your tax-exempt status. So that's since 1954. So prior to 1954, churches still spoke out about every social issue.
Hold that thought right there. Well, Dr. Stan, and of course, Bill Federer was just telling us about some of the books he's written. A couple of them I didn't know about. He's written a book on the income tax in the church, and we'll be getting a copy of that, and how, of course, the income tax is being used to silence of dissent in this country. And of course, do you get at all into the faith-based initiative and its implications, Bill?
I don't get into a whole lot of that. It's basically the historical perspective of it, but it's still fascinating. I mean, when you go back and see, there was none because the Constitution forbade it, and until the Civil War, there was a temporary income tax and so on and so forth.
All right, fine. Well, then, what about some of the other books you've read?
Another one is St. Patrick.
We carry that one?
I think so. And, he wasn't a leprechaun that drank green beer. He was a missionary that confronted the Druids, the pagan Druids in Ireland, and converted 120,000 of them to Christianity, started 300 churches. And in the next century, those churches re-evangelized Europe. All those heathen hordes that overran the Roman Empire were evangelized by the Irish missionaries. So, great story. Another one is The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. Matter of fact, the case that is before the Supreme Court right now that we're waiting to hear back on is from McCreary County, Kentucky. And about 4 years ago, the ACLU sued to remove the Ten Commandments from the McCreary County Courthouse. Matt Staver with the Liberty Council was retained as the attorney for the county. And Matt came to me and said, Bill, can you go through all of your research and come up with evidence of how the Ten Commandments have influenced American law? So I did. I took each commandment individually, traced it back to the colonial charters, and, like in 1682 in Pennsylvania, their law said if any business falls on the first day of the week, commonly called the Lord's Day, the business shall be deferred to the next day. Simple little statement, but that got adopted by the other colonies and finally by the U.S. Constitution. Says the president has 10 days to sign a bill. Sunday's accepted.
Of course, and our founding fathers accepted Sunday because we were a Christian nation, but You see, we're never allowed to say that today.
But Matt won his case, and so they were able to keep it up, but then the ACLU appealed it, and then it went before the United States Supreme Court just last month, and now we're waiting on the decision. So that book, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law, was actually the expert witness testimony that I gave to Matt Staber that he used in that trial. And several other books, also two CDs. One is called American Quotations. It's a word searchable database of all the God and country quotes. And then another called Library of Classics. It's literally over 1,000 books on one CD as text files. So you can open them with your Microsoft Word, your Word Perfect, all the colonial charters, all the works of Shakespeare, all of the Federalist Papers, the Bill of Rights, the King James Bible, the Constitution, all the messages and papers of the presidents. I mean, every address from every president. Of course, we were running out of space, so we had to leave out some of Clinton's, but I didn't think we'd be missing anything. it's a tremendous resource, it also has most of my books on there as well as electronic format. Of course, George Washington Carver, His Life and Faith in His Own Words. Carver, every Black History Month, February, they'll talk about, Black Muslims and so forth, but they don't really like to talk about Black Christians. Well, George Washington Carver was a very strong Christian. He led a Bible study at Tuskegee, and he, one of my favorite quotes, he said, with one hand in the hand of a fellow man in need and the other in the hand of Christ, he could get across the vacuum, and I became an agent. That's the passage, I could do all things through Christ who strengthens me, came to have real meaning. It's a collection of Carver's personal letters where he mentions his Christian faith. He's the guy that started life as a slave and then created over 300 uses for the peanut, which gave birth to a $500 million peanut industry in the southern states, revolutionizing their economy.
That's really one of my favorite stories. It's really beautifully done.
He was such a humble man, but such a strong Christian. There's a few other, American Minute. I send out a free daily email called American Minute to over close to 9,000 people a day. And it also airs on about 100 radio stations around the country. And it's just one short little paragraph of something that happened on each date in American history from a God and country type of perspective. Like on November 19th, I say, on this day, Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address in 1863. At the Gettysburg battlefield, where 50,000 men died or were wounded in a three-day battle, and that he ended his address by saying that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom.
Oh boy, I'm sure glad that the ACLU wasn't around there. They would never. They would have sued him for that.
Yeah, but so what I do is I take something of significance on that day, and I sort of always include something that has to do with faith, and so you can sort of combat a lot of the politically correct editing out of faith simply by going back and looking through history. On D-Day, June 6th, you see the landing on the beaches of Normandy where the orders from Eisenhower mentions God. And then on December 7th, the date which will live in infamy, Roosevelt talks about us being attacked by the Empire of Japan, and he ends it by saying, "And we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God." Of course, for those World War II veterans that are beginning to find out that the new World War II memorial in Washington, D.C. has been conspicuously absent of any mention of God.
Well, I don't think God is going to put up with this indefinitely. There's no instance where a nation is turned against God, where God is not eventually turned against that nation. Well, let's get on into this latest book that you've written, giving the background. Now, what's the title of the latest book?
It's called Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion. I was doing a radio show in Madison, Wisconsin one time, and the host said that he thought Christians were intolerant. And I said, that's interesting. I said, in strict Islamic countries, they prohibit public Judeo-Christian expression. And the ACLU is going around in America prohibiting public Judeo-Christian expression. So the ACLU is doing the same thing that the Taliban is doing. I mean, they're setting up an intolerant regime right on our own soil, right before our very eyes. And then I asked this host, I said, where did tolerance come from anyway? I said, did it originate in Saudi Arabia, where today it's the death penalty if you convert from Islam to another religion? I said, did tolerance originate in the Soviet Union, where for 70 years they outlawed faith? Or did it originate in communist China, where today they're still arresting illegal house church leaders or members of the Falun Gong religion? Did tolerance originate with Robespierre and the French Revolution, where 30,000 people had their heads cut off for not embracing the atheistic goddess of reason, you know. And he didn't know, so I told him, I said, in a nutshell, at the time of our country's founding in Europe, they had this philosophy that whatever the king believed, the kingdom had to believe. If you were in England, you had to be Anglican. Germany, it was Lutheran. Switzerland was Calvinist. Italy, Spain, and France was Roman Catholic. Greece and Russia was Eastern Orthodox. Scotland was Presbyterian. And if you didn't believe the way the king did, you were persecuted and you fled. And the first main group that fled were who? They were the Puritans. Now, it's important to realize, who the Puritans were. And they were members of the Church of England, which was started by Henry VIII. Henry VIII was married to Catherine of Aragon. She was the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabel of Spain, who sent Columbus to America. Anyway, after being married to Catherine for 18 years, Henry decides to divorce her because she didn't have a child, and he wanted an heir to the throne. Well, so he decides to divorce her. The Pope says no. Henry says, the heck with you, I'll be my own Pope. And he starts the church, puts himself as the head. He ended up having six wives, and their fates were divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. So he was not a really nice guy to be married to. But his advisors suggested that if he really wanted to break from Rome, he should stop using the Latin Bible and start using an English Bible. Then people would look to England for their spiritual heritage. He thought it was a good idea, spread it around, but something unexpected happened. People began to read it and began to compare what was in this Bible to this king divorcing and beheading his wives. So this group wanted to purify the Church of England, so they were nicknamed the Puritans. Well, there were, you know, Henry actually hired an archbishop named William Laud, who went through, compiled a list of all the leaders in England and put an O or a P by their name. O for Orthodox and P for Puritan. And all the Puritans were purged from academia. They lost their jobs. They were made second-class citizens. And there was another group that said, you know, it's beyond hope. We're not even going to bother trying to purify the Church of England. So they separated themselves, and they met in secret and in barns and in basements. And when they were caught, they were branded on the face as a heretic with a hot iron, you know. Anyway, this group fled to Holland, and after 12 years, they fled to America, and we call them the Pilgrims. And just 102 of them, and half of them died the first winter, but their little colony continued successfully. And so these Puritans back in England said, well, you know, if those Pilgrims can survive in that new world, so can we. So where there was just 102 Pilgrims, there was 20,000 Puritans left England. They call it the Great Migration, and they estimate a fifth of the wealth of England left and settled in Massachusetts. And there in Massachusetts, the Puritans gave tolerance to who? Only Puritans. I mean, they not only hung witches, the Puritans hung Quakers. There's a statue of Mary Dyer in the Boston Commons today. She was a Quaker heretic that wouldn't recant, you know. The Puritans did not tolerate Roger Williams, so he fled and founded Providence, Rhode Island, and the First Baptist Church in America. The Puritans did not tolerate Thomas Hooker, so he fled and founded Hartford, Connecticut, and the Congregationalist Church. And then the Quakers with William Penn founded Pennsylvania. And within a generation, tolerance ended up developing in America for all Protestant denominations. And this is pretty much the way it was up until the Revolutionary War. And in my book, I have a chapter on each one. So there's tolerance for the Puritans, tolerance for the Protestants, and here is the Constitution of the State of New Jersey in 1776. It says, all persons professing a belief in any Protestant sect shall be able to hold office. Another is the Colony of Georgia, 1732. Their charter said, all persons except papists shall have a free exercise of their religion. Well, a papist was somebody that believed in the Pope, the Catholic Church, you know. The North Carolina Constitution, 1776, says no person who denies the being of God or the truth of the Protestant religion shall hold any office in the civil department within this state.
How are you? Hold on, Don. We'll get back to this in just a couple of minutes. Our guest is Bill Federer. We're talking about his book, Backfired. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of
peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Have you ever wondered whether you're rich?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is William Federer, and we're talking about his book, Backfired. And so we're talking about how initially, of course, when the Puritans came here, why they did not accept the other religions readily. And then as time went by, why, of course, all Protestant religions were accepted, except, of course, they discriminated against Catholics. So pick up the story there.
So it's easy to go back and look at these early documents and see what the founders believed. For example, here's Vermont's constitution in 1777. It says that nor can any man who professes the Protestant religion be justly deprived or abridged of his civil rights. South Carolina's 1778 constitution said the Christian Protestant religion is hereby deemed the established religion of the state. Massachusetts in 1780, it actually had a tax for the support and maintenance of public Protestant teachers of piety and religion. New Hampshire had the same thing. It said that each society and it says to make adequate provision at their own expense for the support and maintenance of public Protestant teachers of piety and religion, on and on. And of course, people scratch their heads and say, "Well, how can they do that with separation of church and state?" It's like all the separation of church and state was to keep the federal government out of what was under the state government's jurisdiction. In other words, the reason the federal constitution says little about religion is not because religion was unimportant, but because religion was so very important, they wanted to keep it under state jurisdiction. Sort of like local control of the school board, local control of the fire department, it was local control of religion.
Well, I think, Bill, what is so important for people to understand is people say, well, what happens, you know, if you have a state that just isn't doing the right thing, and you know, how are we going to just control it? And so maybe we ought to have the federal government come in and do that. But the trouble is, if you allow the federal government to begin to intervene when there is injustice in the state, then what happens when you have injustice at the national level? Are the people at the national level any more altruistic or righteous than the people of the state? Of course not. Are they any less corrupt? Of course not. But the trouble is that once you give all power to the federal government, then, of course, first of all, you'll not be able to change things within your state. And then where do you move to when you have an autocratic, a dictatorial central government that hates religion and has people within our court system who are intent upon destroying it? That was what our founding fathers feared, and yet that's exactly what's happened.
You're exactly right, Stan, and I appreciate you being able to speak the truth like you do so consistently on the radio. But as we go through the timeline, first there was tolerance in America only for Puritans, then it went out to Protestants, and then around the time of the Revolution, it went out to Catholics. There were 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence. One was Catholic. His name was Charles Carroll Carrollton. He was the richest man in America. His cousin started Georgetown. That cousin that started Georgetown, John Carroll, grew up in Maryland, went to Europe, became a priest. When he came back to America, there was not one Catholic church in the entire state of Maryland, so he started one on his mother's farm. And he was so well respected. The problem that they had back then was how could a Catholic be loyal to the Pope and loyal to the country? So there was this idea that they couldn't be patriots. But John Carroll was so patriotic, he actually was asked by the Continental Congress to accompany Ben Franklin on a trip to Canada to try to enlist that French Catholic country to join us in the revolution against Britain. Well, their mission didn't succeed, but during the trip, John Carroll made such a good impression on Franklin and the others that after a few years, many states changed their constitutions to allow Catholics to hold office. And the way they did that is they just said instead of it being any Protestant sect to hold office, it was anybody that believed in Christianity. For example, Delaware's constitution said all office holders had to make the following declaration: I do believe, have faith in God the Father and Jesus Christ, His only Son, the Holy Ghost, one God, blessed forevermore, and I do acknowledge the scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration. Pennsylvania's constitution, instead of it saying you had to be Protestant, it simply said all office holders had to subscribe to the following declaration: I do believe in one God, creator and governor of the universe, and I do acknowledge the scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration. I could go on and on. And it's interesting, two Catholics signed the Constitution. One was the other cousin of Charles Carroll. His name was Daniel Carroll. And he actually donated the land that the U.S. Capitol building is built on right now. And then in the early 1800s, tolerance began to go out to liberal Christian denominations like Unitarians and Universalists. They quoted from the Bible. They referred to Jesus. And so they were sort of let in.
Hold that thought right there, Bill.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia in Siberia at the end of the Second World War. Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Have you ever wondered whether you're really getting the truth from the media? Have you ever thought that maybe somebody's controlling your reality? Well, there's going to be a meeting. It's going to be held at the Westin Hotel over by Great America. It's going to be on May 28th and 29th, and it's going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Now, if you'd like to know more about the Conspiracy Conference, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. This is the fifth exciting year they've had this. Dick Gregory's going to be there, Nick Begich. There's going to be Daniel Hopsicker, Jack McLam. I'm going to have a booth, although I'll not be speaking. You're going to see the contrast between good and evil. The Conspiracy Conference is a great educational opportunity. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going May 28th, 29th. That's 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, this is our guest this afternoon is William Federer, and we're talking about his latest book, and we carry a number of Bill's other books, and we certainly recommend all of them to you, and we'll certainly be carrying this one as well. But go ahead and pick up this story. You were talking about how, you know, as time went by, why increasingly they became tolerant, even to the point eventually of tolerating people who were not Christians within our society, because, of course, the whole idea was that the federal government was to have nothing to do at all with religions, and even at the state level, why they began to accept the fact that if you weren't a Christian, why, of course, you could still have equal rights to everybody else. But the difficulty was that they wanted to maintain the Christian background of this country, because they know that was the foundation of our freedom. We weren't a Hindu nation, we weren't a Muslim nation, we weren't a Jewish nation, we were a Christian nation. Although the Jewish background, certainly there was a continuity between Judaism and Christianity. Christianity had come out of Judaism, so Jews were tolerated here in this country, weren't they, from the really very close to the beginning?
Well, that's the next chapter of my book. I'll just read one quote, though, about the liberal Christians. And again, you drop a pebble in the pond, the ripples go out. So first there was tolerance in America only for Puritans. Then it went out to Protestants. Then it went out to Catholics. Then it went out to liberal Christians. Here's a quote from a historian in the early 1800s named Francis Grund. He said, yet there are religious denominations in the United States whose creeds very nearly verge on deism, but taking their arguments from the Bible and calling themselves followers of Christ, they and their doctrines are tolerated. In other words, they got in by acting in, you know, showing themselves, pretending like they were Christians. But the next step was the Jews. There were always pockets of Jews in America, you know, they came with the 23 of them came over and settled in the Dutch colony of New Amsterdam, but they were not allowed to worship outside of their house. They were not allowed to hold office. And after a few years, they were allowed, though, to buy land for a cemetery. Just a small group of them. And in 1730, they were finally allowed to build a synagogue. And there were about 1,300 to 1,500 Jews in America during the entire colonial period. So a very tiny fraction. Seven synagogues from New York down to Savannah, Georgia. And then at the turn of the 1700s to 1800s, there were about 6,000 Jews in America. In the 1830s, there were about 17,000. And then in the middle 1800s, there were several hundred thousand came over from Bavaria, from Germany, because of a persecution over there. And about that time is when the Jews began to be fully tolerated. In other words, Abraham Lincoln was the first one to allow Hebrew chaplains in the military. Prior to Abraham Lincoln, all military chaplains had to belong to Christian denominations. 1860 was the very first time a rabbi was invited to open a session of Congress. His name was Morris Jacob Rafal. The Confederate States of America had the first cabinet member that was Jewish in the entire history of the North America. And then it wasn't until Teddy Roosevelt that he put Oscar Strauss on his cabinet, who was the first Jewish cabinet member, you know, in the United States. But and then in the middle 1800s, many states began to change their constitutions to allow Jews to hold office. For example, Maryland, in 1776, their state constitution said all office holders had to make a declaration of belief in the Christian religion. Again, we view that as very narrow-minded today. They thought they were being very progressive, and in fact they were, as compared to Europe, where you had to belong to a particular denomination of Christianity to hold office. In England, you had to be Anglican. Germany, it was Lutheran. Switzerland was Calvinist. Italy, Spain, and France, Roman Catholic. Greece and Russia, Eastern Orthodox. So they were thinking that they were very progressive, and they were, by saying all you had to do was be a Christian. In other words, you not only had to lay your hand on a Bible to swear into office, you had to swear you believed in the Bible in order to hold office, which makes sense. What good would it do to lay your hand on a book you didn't believe in? You know. Anyway, in 1851, Maryland added to its oath of office, and if the party shall profess to be a Jew, the declaration shall be of a belief in a future state of rewards and punishments. So there was a provision for Jews to hold office in the middle 1800s. And then in the late 1800s, tolerance went out to anybody that was a monotheist, believing in one God. You know, our coins say what? They say, in God we trust. It's God singular. It's not in God's plural. We're not talking Buddhism or Hinduism, you know, two of the five major world religions, you know, are excluded. We're not talking Greek mythology or Roman, you know, by the gods. You know, it was monotheism. All 50 state constitutions acknowledge God. I have an entire chapter in my book on how tolerance went out to all monotheists, and I list every single state constitution. For example, here's California's 1879 constitution. Has in the preamble, grateful to Almighty God for our freedoms. And so it mentions a monotheistic God. All 43 presidents acknowledged God, again, monotheistic, in their inaugural address, and ended their oath with, so help me God. In the court of law, it was to swear, tell the truth, hold truth, not but the truth, so help you God. So it was monotheism. And I was amazed, Dr. Stan, in my research, to find out that many state constitutions actually forbade citizenship to Chinese, Japanese, and others of Mongolian races. And this was in part because they were Buddhists. And the country just wasn't ready in the 1800s to have Buddhist temples around. But finally, beginning in the 1900s, the polytheists began to be tolerated in America. And then, not too long after that, it went out to all religions. And then, in the middle 1900s, tolerance finally went out to the atheist, the secular humanist, and the anti-religious. And that's why it's so ironic that the last ones in the boat have decided it's too crowded and decided to push the first ones out. So now we have tolerance for everybody in America except the ones that came up with the idea. You know, if you can imagine a sea of people drowning in persecution, and a lifeboat comes piloted by Puritans. They first pull into the boat their fellow Puritans, and then other Protestants, and then Catholics, and then liberal Christians, Jews, monotheist policy. They finally pull in the boat the atheists, and the atheists say, this boat's too crowded, and they push out the Judeo-Christian beliefs that started holding off. And, you know, one of the points I made, as a matter of fact, I was on C-SPAN last week up in Washington, D.C., at a conference for confronting judicial activism. But I spoke about my book, and I said, if you go to the CIA.gov website, now this is the CIA's website, it has a link on there called the World Fact Book. And you click on it, it lists every nation in the world and every imaginable statistic you'd like to know about that nation. It's great to help your kids with homework, you know. Anyway, you click on Israel. You know, it talks about amount of arable land, gross national product, infant mortality rate, HIV death rate, and religion. And it says that Israel is 80% Jewish. You click on Japan, it's 85% Buddhist. You click on Pakistan, it's 95% Muslim. You click on Saudi Arabia, and it's 100% Muslim. That's because it's the death penalty if you're anything else. You click on Greece, it's 95% Eastern Orthodox. Poland is 95% Roman Catholic. You click on the United States of America, guess what our CIA.gov website says?
85% Christian?
It says, right now it says 78% Christian.
All right, well, we're losing ground, but we knew that.
Right, yeah, 10 years ago, it said we were 85%. And, matter of fact, they just put in the new census numbers just this last year.
I'm a little old-fashioned, Al, forgive me.
No, I mean, it's just last year that the, because I checked the website fairly frequently, and I just noticed this last year it had changed from 85 to 78, so it's going down.
And, of course, it is, because the church has allowed them to take God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools and to teach our children in atheism and hatred of God, and that's what evolution is all about. And the church has allowed that. That's what's so unconscionable. We would not be in the mess we are today had the ministers of this country had the courage to stand up for our Christian heritage.
Well, and then another interesting angle on this, by the way, that 78% is divided up 52% Protestant, 24% Catholic, 2% Mormon, 2% Jewish, 1% Muslim, 0.5% Hindu, and 0.5% Buddhist. I mean, if you want to talk multicultural, we're still, according to our own CIA.gov website, 80% Judeo-Christian. I mean, I got a degree in accounting. I think that's a majority, you know. But if 10 years ago we were 84%, we're going down. But that means if you go back in time, the further you go back, the more Christian the country was. If you go back to the time of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural address, which is engraved in stone on the Lincoln Memorial up in Washington, D.C., it says both sides read the same Bible and pray to the same God. The prayers of both could not be answered. Indeed, the prayers of neither have been answered sufficiently. I mean, here he's acknowledging that both sides of the country read the same Bible, pray the same God. You know, but you go further back in time to the time of the Revolution, and it's close to 99% of the country was Christian. I mean, there was only like 1,500 Jews in America during that whole colonial period. It was 99% Christian. So that begs the question, what would motivate a predominantly Christian populace to want to tolerate non-Christians? So, I mean, in America, it wasn't Muslims coming up with ideas how to tolerate non-Muslims. It wasn't atheists coming up with ideas how to tolerate non-atheists. It was Christians, and I found three reasons in my research. One is Jesus never forced anybody to believe in him, so we shouldn't. Now, this is contrary to Muhammad, who had an army that said submit or die, you know. And the second was the Christian ethic, the Judeo-Christian concept of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, called the Golden Rule. Jesus said it on the Sermon on the Mount. Do unto others as you have them do unto you. So we would want people to tolerate us, so the Christians want to tolerate us. And then the third reason I found the most fascinating was spreading the faith, evangelism. The first foreign missionary sent out from America was in 1812. Adoniram Judson was a Baptist minister who went to Rangoon, Burma. Well, 1812 is a long time after 1787 when the Constitution was written. It's a long time after 1789 when the First Amendment was written. It's a long time after 1776. So prior to 1812, the predominant idea of how to reach people of other religions was to allow them to come into your neighborhood and into your country. So these were Christian arguments to a Christian populace in favor of tolerating non-Christians. It wasn't Muslims coming up with ideas on how to tolerate non-Muslims. It was Christians, which highlights the irony and the hypocrisy that today there is intolerance of that Christian faith. Matter of fact, on the back of my book, and the title of my book is Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion, the back of my book, I put, how did America go from pilgrims seeking freedom to express their Judeo-Christian beliefs to today's discrimination against those very beliefs in the name of tolerance? I mean, it's like, hello, how did we get from there to here? I mean, here the pilgrims came here, so they have the freedom to express their Judeo-Christian beliefs, and now we're discriminating specifically against those Judeo-Christian beliefs, and we're calling it tolerance. I mean, it's the irony of ironies, and if we don't know our history, then we go along with it, where they say, oh, yeah, you Christians are intolerant because you're not putting up with homosexuality and all these other kind of stuff. It's like, wait a second, we're the ones that came up with the idea. You know, give me a globe, point your finger to any other country where tolerance originated from. You can't find it. You know, it didn't migrate over here from the Hindus. The country wasn't founded by Hindus. Even today, there's less than 0.5% of Hindus. It couldn't have been from them. It couldn't have been from the Buddhists. It couldn't have been, you know, it was the Christians that were in Europe. Whether you were a Catholic in a Protestant country, or a Protestant in a Catholic country, or a Baptist in an Anglican country, or a Quaker in a Lutheran country, or a Moravian in a, you know, if they fled to America, insisting on the right to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience. Once they got over here, they said, you know, to be intellectually consistent, the same right I'm demanding for myself, I have to grant to these other groups coming over. And that's where it birthed. That was where the beginning was. You know, one of the interesting quotes that I found when doing my research was from Charles Carroll, the one Catholic who signed the Declaration of Independence. And several years after, when he was asked why he got involved in the revolution, he said, observing the Christian faith divided into so many different sects, and that's S-E-C-T-S, gave me the assurance that no one sect would gain the predominance and become the official religion of the state. This hope was thus early entertained, and many of us joined into the revolution jealously. And so it's like today when we see all the churches, a common thought is, this is terrible, the body of Christ is so divided that we have all these other different denominations, can't we all get together? Well, the early Americans saw all these denominations and said, this is great, this is wonderful, free market. They'll all be vying for the public and keeping each other in check, and no one denomination will have a chance to become so ingrained as to become the religion of the state. And so that was their idea back then. And you know, one of the other points that I found interesting, Dr. Stan, is that in Europe, in the Middle Ages, they thought that religion was something forced from the outside in. That the king really didn't care what you believed in your heart. By golly, he wanted you to worship on Sunday the way he wanted you to worship. He wanted you to believe the way he wanted you to believe. And he really didn't care about if you know, you did it in your heart. He wanted the outward compliance. It was something forced from the outside in.
Well, don't you think it really was that they were using religion to justify the rule of the king?
Yeah.
In other words, down throughout the ages, why rulers and tyrants have used religion to control the people. Here in America, it was entirely different because the power of the central authority was so weak that nobody could utilize the people. The people were free because the power of government was limited, and liberty and limited government were synonymous. Only as the power of government increases can you use religion to control the people.
And you know, in Muslim countries, religion is something forced from the outside in. That they want you to bow to Mecca 5 times a day. They could care less if you had a warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart toward Allah when you do it, you know. And but in America, they realized this brand new concept that, no, true religion is something from the inside out, not forced from the outside in. That it's like you grab a teenager by the ear and you make him say a prayer. Well, yeah, they'll say it, but is it meaningful to God? But if that teenager voluntarily says the prayer, well, then it means something. One of the quotes that I found fascinating was from James Madison. Now, he was the one who introduced the First Amendment in the first session of Congress. So James Madison ought to have some idea of what the First Amendment meant because he introduced the thing. He was a president during a terrorist attack when the White House was burnt by the British, and he declared a national day of prayer to Almighty God. Well, the war got worse. He declared another national day of prayer to Almighty God. It got worse. Then he turns on and lays a national, and proclaims a national day of humiliation, fasting, and prayer to Almighty God. Now, here's the president, James Madison. He's the guy that introduced the First Amendment in Congress. And yet when it's his turn to be president, he declares a national day of fasting to Almighty God. Certainly he didn't think his First Amendment was to keep God out of government.
Amen to that. Hey, we're out of just time. You want to get your website out there, Bill?
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. It's AmericanMinute.com. AmericanMinute.com. I send out that free daily email called American Minute. Anybody can sign up for it. AmericanMinute.com. And then a toll-free number is 1-888-USA-WORD, 888-USA-WORD. But I do want to encourage all the listeners to buy the books through Dr. Stan and through Radio Liberty and give him your support. The title of the book is Backfired, and you'll love it. It's an absolute tremendous compilation of information in an easy-to-understand format.
I'm looking forward to getting it. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thank
God
you.
Bless.
Well, we have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let's see if we can get somebody here.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment.
Invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free. 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest today was William Federer, and we carry his book, America's God and Country. We carry his book on St. Nicholas. We carry his book on St. Patrick. We carry his book on George Washington Carver. We have the DVD, which is, of course, America's God and Country, and I believe we have the other DVD we were talking about, and we're going to carry this book on Backfire. We'll have it. We don't know the cost of it yet, but if you're interested, well, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You must understand that there is a conspiracy against God. There always has been a conspiracy against God. You can get out your Bible and read Jeremiah 11:9, Ezekiel 22:25. It's the same conspiracy. They want, of course, to destroy the Christian heritage of this country. because there are truly demonic forces working behind the scenes. We have secret societies here in the United States with millions of members. You really need to get the book Unholy Alliance. Goes into the background of Masonry with 2 to 3 million people working within our courts, working within our government, working within our state legislatures, working within our legal system, and nobody has the courage to talk about them. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will explain to you why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. And, of course, these are all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Again, the William Federer's book, America's God and Country. The DVD, and is it the DVD or CD? I'm not sure which one it is, but we carry that. It's got all sorts of things on it that you really want to have. And then, of course, his book on St. Patrick, and his book on Santa Claus, and his book on George Washington Carver. And we may even carry another couple of books. Look in our catalog, if you have one of our catalogs, into the background of the things that Bill Federer has written, but we will be carrying Backfire. And then understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, and you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand that fact. If you want to know what's really going on with the Michael Jackson trial today, you need to get our video. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Let me suggest that you get this video, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version, and we will have it very soon on DVD. I don't know where they've arrived yet, but there are DVDs on the various versions of this. You need to get the video, Megiddo 1, which is 2.25 hours, very professionally done, going into the prophecies as they apply today, and take you, of course, into World War III, which we were involved in, but they're not going to tell the American people that. Why, you might object to thinking your children are going to be used for cannon fodder in a war that is primarily a diversion to distract you from what's going on here at home. And then, of course, we have Megiddo 2. You need to get the information. You need to understand what this is about. How do we back our boys? We get them out of this quagmire before our city's in rubble. And, of course, the retaliation, which is being intentionally created. We are doing everything we can to inflame the Muslim world and the rest of the world for a coming war with America. And if you look at it from a prophetic point of view, when you go back and you read Ezekiel, Hosea 39:6, I think you'll be a little shocked and horrified to see what is prophesied for days such as we live in. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our website is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Look at the various items we carry. We carry the Berkey products and other products. We, of course, have all sorts of books and videos and audio tapes. You can listen to our archive programs, many hours a day. You can listen to our live programs there 3 hours a day, and on the other networks another 2 hours a day. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
Enriching the airwaves for your listening pleasure. So much is happening in the world today. Stay informed. Stay tuned to KFER, your Moody Broadcast affiliate for the Central California coast. KFER 89.9.
stand back here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills, overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not